This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Wang Shaning. It is 7:06 in the morning, Tuesday the 10th of September, and overnight US stocks finished mixed as investors ditched the companies behind the latest risk-on rally, while sovereign bond yields rose in Europe and America.
Elsewhere, oil advanced after Saudi Arabia's new energy minister signaled that OPEC and its allies will continue with production cuts, and the group also prepares to gather in Abu Dhabi.
So for more on this morning, we speak to Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Thank you for joining us this morning, Joe. Now, Apple is about to announce its latest slew of iPhones. Is that enough to get you excited in Apple or the tech sector, despite the recent volatility seen there?
Well, I think the tech sector in general is under a lot of scrutiny when it comes to the regulators. So whether it's the European Union, the U.S. federal government, or the state attorney generals, be a little cautious here. But nevertheless, I think earnings for Q3 for the tech giants are going to be pretty good. There's still a lot of demand for software, hardware, for content. So you know, we still like and favor the big tech giants, with notwithstanding some of these headwinds that they're facing.
And Joe, since we are talking about Apple, they recently issued bonds to the tune of $7 billion, although they're actually sitting on $200 billion in cash. Now, what does this signify to you about the state of capital markets?
Well, I mean, it signifies that raising cash or raising, you know, any debt is very cheap. So I think it's, you know, it's smart upon companies, given where we are in capital markets, interest rates, negative interest rates, 30% or more here. Globally, that to raise, you know, go out in the capital markets, do some debt issuance, and I think it makes sense. And how they deploy that, we'll see otherwise. But, you know, right now, the cost of capital, the cost of raising capital is very favorable for those who have good balance sheets. And there's a lot of demand, as you know. I mean, everyone knows they're just looking, everyone's looking for a place to put money to work. So when it's a good corporate issuance, I think there's demand will be there.
Joe, talking about demand, China's exports unexpectedly declined in August with the sales to the U.S. tumbling. And this is, of course, amid the escalating trade war between the two countries. And we also saw that India's car numbers also fell very sharply in the latest reporting. What does this mean for global economy, for the trade situation, and with regards to also investing in emerging markets?
Well, I think the autos, India, China, the downturn in China trade, I guess, you know, we are in the midst of a global manufacturing recession. I don't think it's too deep just yet. It can be reversed. But clearly the manufacturing globally, whether it's a global supply chain, automobiles, Brexit, people don't talk about that. That's created a lot of global supply chain issues as well. That continues. And I think that's the drag on global growth, global confidence. It keeps us cautious. We're not overly bullish in the equity markets here because we do have a bifurcation. You know, consumerism, services are doing well, relatively well, weakening, albeit. But manufacturing, no doubt, there's a global manufacturing recession that we've got to work through. And hopefully we get that behind us as we enter 2020.
And Joe, also taking a look over at Europe, Germany, which is Europe's largest economy, they shrank in the second quarter. And while European policymakers are talking up their readiness to step up public spending in order to stave off an economic slowdown, nothing's really happened. Is it time to sell off positions in Europe?
Well, if you're in Europe now, no, don't sell out of positions. And we've talked about this before. Europe is the laggard. And it will always be the laggard relative to the United States, China, ASEAN, even Malaysia, for that matter. I mean, they're dragging their feet. We got a change in leadership. But you know, when you look across Europe, there's good luxury brand companies, logistics, some insurance. For the really the bank, for the investor that really wants to take a risk, the banks, I mean, someday they'll be back. I don't know, not this decade, because it's almost over. But nevertheless, no, if you're in Europe, I would stay put because I do think a stimulus is coming. We're going to start to see global trade pick up in 2020. Inflationary efforts are there. But, you know, when you look at the big three, it's always the U.S., the EU, and China. And EU remains a laggard. And right now, I would not be selling out of any positions that I'm in now.
Thank you so much, Joe. And that was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, of the opinion that there are still some bright spots over in Europe, although they do lag behind the U.S. and China.
Yeah, I think his point is don't sell something that is already so sharply down. And Brexit is the main cause of that. Sentiment around in Europe are not very good. But very startling to hear Joe use the R word, right? Saying that the manufacturing sector right now is in the midst of recession.
Close to a recession.
That's not something that people say openly these days because they want quantitative easing. They want interest rates to go down further. They want liquidity to be there. But the numbers can't lie, I suppose. And some of these numbers coming out of China and India are quite worrying.
Yeah, it seems as if like global growth is really just being pushed on by the consumer, right, at this current juncture. But if things continue to deteriorate, and we're just lucky that we haven't seen job numbers, unemployment increase. If that happens, then I think you really have that dreaded R word, not just in manufacturing, but for every sector.
Yeah, I think that right now we are talking about trade diversion, right? Malaysia and Vietnam benefiting from the trade war that's going on. We've also had other commentators coming onto the show saying that in the long run, this kind of fight will not benefit anybody. Mm. The whole world will suffer for this.
Indeed. But right now, let's also take a look at some other international headlines this morning, because Nissan is in the news. Less than a year since a dramatic downfall seen by Carlos Ghosn, Nissan Motor is losing another leader. So their CEO, Hiroto Sakawa, he was asked by the board on Monday to step down by September 16th. That is in 6 days. And he'll be replaced by the current COO, Yasuhiro Yamauchi, until a permanent replacement is named by the end of October. And Sakawa was felled by a scandal over excess pay.
That's right, among other things, and also facing questions about corporate governance and an uncertain future. And in the months since Ghosn was arrested for allegedly underreporting his own compensation and misappropriating funds. Since that time as well, Nissan has struggled to bounce back.
Meanwhile, under Saigawa's reign, he did distance Nissan from Ghosn. He said earnings did deteriorate, he acknowledged it, and relations with top shareholders Renault also soured to the point that their mega merger, which markets did talk about with Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, actually collapsed.
So Nissan's next CEO, whoever that may be, will now face the challenge of righting a ship that is currently in disarray at a very sensitive time, and particularly with global automakers rushing to position themselves for the coming age of electric vehicles and motor cars. So it's whether or not they'll be able to push themselves to the forefront of this new drive in the automotive sector while also trying to get their own house in order.
But this is not just faced by Nissan. It's faced by most of the global automakers today. In fact, Moody's just downgraded Ford's bonds to junk rating because of a tight cash flow. What's ironic is that it's 10 years from the last financial crisis when they were actually bailed out by the US government. And woe and behold, we are back to square one. I think this is not helped by the global slowdown. So sales are down. And compounding this is also the enormous costs or capex going to be involved in, in electric vehicles, which is definitely something all the car companies are looking at, which also then drives the merger and acquisitions because it makes sense to share the cost rather mm-hmm. than strike it out on your own.
Yeah, I think Nissan and Renault and Fiat Chrysler have not ruled out that merger or that alliance yet. They're still looking into it. Maybe there is no leadership there at this point in time to make a firm decision.
Yes, and maybe once things have settled down, we may see that news start to crop up again. But then speaking also of technologies, shares of some of this year's highest flying software stocks tumbled on Monday as investors appeared to reevaluate the rally in light of premium valuations and their rapid revenue growth commands. So data management software developer Alteryx plunged as much as 15%, while cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike Holdings also sank 13%. And they've been among 2019's top performers, more than doubling since the start of the year.
So you've heard of the PE ratio, right? The price earning ratio, which to your anger sometimes, Xiaoning, there's no E, there's just the P. And what do you do when there's no E? You go to sales, right?
No, you do this the other one called EV, another magical two syllable E and a V,
enterprise value, right? Enterprise value, which includes a substantial amount of debt as well. But price to sales is something that people use as well. Obviously, if investors buy into you, you must have at least $1 of revenue. And the price to sales on some of these software companies, 20 times. Just imagine that we are used to price earning ratios of 20 times. The price to sales of 20 times, that's almost unheard of. Well, it's heard of now because it exists, right?
Well, Bloomberg did also say that both of these companies that I mentioned, so Alteryx and CrowdStrike, they had revenue growth exceeding 70% in the second quarter and traded at more than 20 times the estimated sales. Currently, the average for the S&P 500 software index is about 7 times estimated sales. Enterprise software companies have still been amongst the standout gainers for the S&P 500 this year. And investors are willing, appear to be willing to pay higher prices for this fast revenue expansion, even if there aren't any actual earnings to back them up.
Well, that was on the logic that they are more insulated from the trade war and they are not so much used in China. And also, if you look at the business model, there isn't much capex involved because there's no hardware, right? It's just basically
people and their time.
So it, in a way, it's like, wow, you can imagine the economies of scale, right? So I think the market was paying a lot of money for these stocks. But with all these recent headlines that, hey, global growth is slowing and the fact that the index has actually gone up 36%, I guess investors are rushing to take money off the table as quickly as possible and lock in their gains.
So other notable decliners on Monday include Fastly Inc., which fell 16%, Slack Technologies, which fell 12%, and Zoom Video Communications, which fell 9.6%. But the other interesting international headline has also been to do with Goldman Sachs, because they appear to be tapping top brass to navigate a notoriously complicated region where it has stumbled of late, specifically the Middle East. Now, after missing out on at least $25 billion in deals in Abu Dhabi due to their involvement in the 1MDB scandal, Goldman Sachs is now making a push into Saudi Arabia.
That's right. And Goldman has also turned to international banking head Richard Nod and former Donald Trump advisor Dina Powell to help lead the push.
Yeah, Bloomberg sources say they've spent months wooing top officials in Riyadh, vying for a slice of the world's biggest IPO, the Saudi Aramco.
Yes, and at one point, the Middle East was Goldman Sachs' most lucrative markets in the region, and specifically Saudi Arabia. But since 1MDB, that hasn't been the case. And also, there's the complicating factor of its dealings with Qatar have become a lot more complicated because of diplomatic clashes between Qatar and Saudi Arabia. Now, of course, Goldman is not the only one looking at Saudi. Other global banks, including JP Morgan and Credit Suisse, are investing in Saudi Arabia, since it promises some of the world's biggest deals.
Yeah, I think there is a lot to do in Saudi Arabia since that shakeup that lasted about 10 days and it finally culminated in the appointment of the prince of King Salman, King Salman's son, that is, to be the energy minister after firing Khalid Al-Faleh, who is the very powerful voice in the oil world and in OPEC. So I think that as a result of this shakeup, there is a lot of deals to be done there, not least from the listing of Saudi Aramco.
So it'll be fascinating to watch the kind of news coming out of Saudi Arabia at this point. Right now, though, we are coming up on a few messages for you, and then we'll be back to take a look at some local stories, including EPF. So be sure to stay tuned here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.